WZRD Chicago. On the phone is Tom Tresser of Civic Lab, somebody involved in the No Games Chicago, which it occurred to me we owe as citizens of this area, especially the city, we owe a debt of gratitude, because it was through their efforts, their leadership, and the combined efforts of everybody who got involved in the No Games Chicago that Chicago dodged the bullet of having been burdened by the debt induced through the Olympic Games, Summer Olympics of 2016, which the Daley administration tried to foist upon us with lots of misinformation about the benefits that would follow. Tom, how did you get involved in No Games Chicago, and explain to people your belief in the power of civic activism?
Sure. Well, thanks, Wizard, for bringing me on the air here. as we've got less than 90 days to go to the opening of the 2016, I guess they're going to call them the Zika Virus Olympics in Rio. A lot of people thoughts are turning to the what I call the battle for the bid, which happened in late 2008 and all through 2009. So let's get in the Wayback Machine for your listeners to remind ourselves of the last few years of the Daley administration. Mayor Daley put everything he had into the bid for the 2016 Summer Olympics. He started working on it in 2007 and really, really, really ramped it up in 2008. Some say that he really didn't govern the city for 2 years. He was so consumed with getting the games. Kids were being shot almost every other day. I think 34 kids were actually shot in CPS buildings. And he really didn't know or care or really wasn't really present for any of that. Instead, he put all his people on to this 2016 committee. He sent Lori Healy from his staff, chief of staff, over to head the games, and tapped a guy named Pat Ryan. I'm not kind of sure he's a billionaire. He's very wealthy. He was the head of Aon Insurance to be the chair of the board of the 2016 games. Mr. Ryan had given Daley, I think, $600,000 or some such number for the last time Mayor Daley ran for office. And I think Aon Insurance had like a $40 million contract with the city of Chicago. All this is happening, you know, people scratching each other's backs. That's the old story in Chicago. Anyway, Chicago was picked to be one of the four finalists in the spring of 2008. So it was us, Rio de Janeiro, Madrid, Spain, and Tokyo, Japan. We were the four finalists. So that's what was happening. And I don't know if people can remember, but, you know, there were 2016 posters that said Imagine, like everywhere, on the bus stops. Everywhere you looked in the heart of the city.
It was a done deal, we were told.
It was a done deal. And the reasoning was because Obama had been elected president, and hugely charismatic, first African-American president of the United States. And it was thought that he would be able to woo the African delegates to the IOC and secure their votes, as well as just using his charisma and charm and, personal influence. And people were saying, people who know the Olympics deeply reminded us of what had happened a few years before that, when the decision was coming to decide who would host the 2012 Olympics. Now, there's always a seven-year lead time. So we're talking about 2005, where the IOC was meeting in Paris. And it was thought that Paris was going to get the games. But Tony Blair, who was then a fairly new in office, charismatic leader, personally wooed the members of the IOC, and literally at the last minute pulled the rug out from under Paris and secured the 2012 games for London, England. So that was very prominent in the sports community's minds, and even the Las Vegas odds makers were saying it was even money. You know, it was kind of like it was ours to lose. And that was what was out there. Now, whether that was accurate or not, goodness gracious, who knows? But that was the environment we were in here in 2008, in which the mayor was sending his people around, and they raised $90 million to back the bid, including Chicago's foundations, the MacArthur Foundation, which even today has an op-ed piece in Crane Chicago defending their record of supporting Chicago's, you know, black community, because they've been stung. Phil Jackson of the Black Star Project just last week had an op-ed saying, you know, MacArthur has turned its back on the black community. Well, I think the evidence is in his favor, because back in 2008 and 2009, when all this was ramping up, remember the home mortgage crisis hit us, and people's houses were going underwater, and because of predatory loan practices, the African-American community was severely hit. Now, this is not exactly getting to your question, but it's part of the background of why I got involved. Background for all this is, you know, Chicago was hit bad by the global financial collapse, and the black community, which had already been preyed upon with redlining and predatory lending practices.
Previously, that's right.
That was already sort of deep in our background. So all that was present right then. And instead of MacArthur and other foundations turning their eyes to our most needy neighbors, they gave Mayor Daley $6 million. You know, the Chicago's foundation community gave the mayor $6 million to put in the bid. So this is kind of what happens, you know, when a powerful person like the mayor decides that something should be done. Everybody just bows down. And the newspapers echoed the bullshit that came out of the bid committee, and all this was very discouraging. So I was curious, and though we're talking about the summer of 2008, I was asking around Chicago's nonprofit community, who's fighting them? Is anybody, for example, doing a study that would look at the literature? Because, you know, it was early on in the bid, so, you know, people were just starting to understand what we were in for, you know, in terms of the timeline, you know, when the actual bid would be decided. We were just sort of learning about all that. So I thought this would be a good time for some nonprofits who fight for social justice to, you know, maybe pool their resources and hire a researcher or somebody who knows about sports economics, simply to counter the noise and the BS that were coming out of the mayor's office. Nobody would do it. And I talked to a number of very well-known civic leaders, and they said they dare not take on this, you know, speak out against the project. They dare not cross Mayor Daley. So, and, you know, at the same time, you had Michael Scott running around. Michael Scott, who was at the time the president of the Board of Education. Before that, he'd been a member of the Chicago Park District Board. And an influential businessman. He was appointed one of the chairs of the public civic engagement committee of the Olympics, the 2016 committee. And so Michael Scott was running around Chicago promising the sun, the moon, the earth to nonprofits, like, you know, you'll get jobs, you know, the housing that we'll build, we'll make it affordable housing.
These are just a point of clarification. These are nonprofits that worked in underserved, basically black communities,
yes,
that would have been directly impacted by,
yes,
the footprint,
exactly,
of the Olympic Games, the buildings,
exactly,
and landscape that would have been radically changed or torn down in order to put up structures to accommodate,
exactly,
the games.
Right. Or proximate to them. And, you know, and so you'll get jobs, you know, your community will build a swimming pool for your park, you know, just all kinds of outrageous things. At the same time, they're terrorizing citizen groups. So the yacht people who have you know, boats all along the lake, you know, when the water events would be built, we were going to lose several of the marinas that would have been obliterated for the various venues. And all those yachters were going to, you know, people who moored their boats, not just yachters, but even small fishermen, all the people who have boats along the lake, for, you know, like maybe 2,000 of them would have been displaced. They were told to fly on their boats and on the actual yacht clubs and marinas, the Olympic flag, or, this is a direct quote from one of the Commodores, you would never berth in Chicago again. So we're talking about extortion, terrorism, seduction, lying. All this is happening, you know, below the waterline. And that, this is what I was learning. The more I talk to people, we're talking about the summer of 2008. The more I talk to people, the more alarmed I got. Because all you have to do is sit down in front of a computer and just Google and do some research. And, you know, within about an hour, you have pretty compelling evidence that the Olympics are a terrible deal. They bankrupt your city. They screw with your environment. They shred civil liberties. And so the record was pretty clear. And this is even, this is, again, I'm talking about research in 2008, summer of 2008. So I was going to start my own website, but I ran across the website No Game Chicago. And I thought, this is great. Who are these guys? So I reached out to them, and in the fall, early fall of 2008, I met with Bob Quellos and Ramsen Cannon. And Bob is an architect now, and then he was a student. And Ramsen was, I think, in pre-law. Now he's a lawyer. He had written many years, I believe, for Chicagoist. I may have that wrong. He was covering politics. Anyway, those two gentlemen had started No Game Chicago, so I met with them, and I said, I'm in. And so we became colleagues, and the first event that No Games did was a public forum at the UIC Student Center on January 29th, 2009. That's where No Games went public, and we had speakers, Karen Lewis, who was then an organizer with the Caucus of Rank-and-File Educators.
That's right.
She had not yet taken over. She had not yet taken over.
They were fighting for control of the union.
So, right, that happened later in the year, but this was January, so she was still a line teacher and one of the leaders of CORE. J.R. Fleming, a human rights activist, and then Deborah Parker. Oh, I'm going to get her name wrong. Now she's going to kill me. She was a low-income housing activist. Deborah Taylor. That's it, Deborah Taylor. She lived in affordable housing, and she was an activist to maintain affordable housing. And the keynote speaker was a guy named Dr. Christopher Drew, who came down from Toronto. Yeah. He'd written a book called Five Ring Circus. And he was here to tell us, since Toronto was very close to opening their own games, but he had been an organizer against the Vancouver getting the Winter Olympics for 2010, and he was telling us that the games go way over budget, that the promised jobs never materialize, that it's a huge environmental drain, that they were cutting down virgin forests for the ski lifts. I mean, he just went on and on. He held up a copy of the Vancouver Sun. The headline was, you know, with 3-inch letters, you know, games $2 billion over budget. And he was basically saying, this is your headlines of the future. And it couldn't have been starker. We had about 250 people in the meeting and some television coverage, and that was the start of the game in Chicago. So, you know, we organized adroitly from there on, and I can tell you more, but that was the start of it. I mean, it was basically someone has to step up and do what I call the due diligence and give this information to the citizens of the people of Chicago, because you are not being told the truth. And this is unfortunately a story that happens over and over again for many important things in the city. We are not told the truth about our budgets. We're not told the truth about the police. We're not told the truth about major contracts and initiatives such as the Olympic bid. They're completely falsifying, lying, fudging numbers, and so it's like you're wondering, this is the kind of conundrum that a person is in, like, well, who's supposed to tell the truth? I mean, where are the newspapers? Aren't they supposed to, like, do their research? Where are the aldermen? What a joke, right? Where are the think tanks? Who's watching our back, for goodness sakes? That's the kind of thought processes we were going through, and in the end, we realized nobody. The answer is nobody. So it was up to these volunteers, this ragtag group of volunteers called No Game Chicago. We didn't even have an office. We didn't even have a phone number. to sort of do this heavy lifting.
You managed it. This is WZRD Chicago. We're talking to Tom Tresser, who was one of the principal organizers with No Game Chicago, went on to form something called Civic Lab, which was about engaging people in civic actions, in enlightening them to the power of the people when you have both information and organization and a cause in the pursuit of justice, because it would have been quite unjust had we been further burdened by the Olympics. The mayor has, current mayor and the past one, have been doing everything they can to bankrupt the city in order to follow through on a neoliberal agenda of privatizing, selling off its assets to investment banks and hedge funds. Had we been stuck with the Olympics, things would have been far worse than they are, and they're pretty bad right now. The city claims to be broke, and yet one of the things that you've gone on to document, that it's not broke at all. Can you talk about the way you've brought mapping techniques to help people visualize what's being done to them and how they're being lied to? The common mantra in this town is, you can't fight City Hall.
Well, you can, and we did, and we won. But
that's right.
The exercise for No Game Chicago really was the prelude to everything I've been doing over the last 5 years, because running all over the city, we must have done, I don't know, maybe 100 meetings. So, you know, we were invited to meetings, we crashed meetings, we showed up every time the Olympic Committee showed up. And so you're sort of, in those situations, you might have 5 or 10 minutes, if that, to get across a lot of complicated information. And remember that the Olympic Committee and the mayor and all their PR flacks and thugs all preceded you with all their unlimited resources. So how are you going to counter all that? What are you going to do? Do you show a slideshow? Do you use sock puppets? You pass out flyers? You know, tell stories? How do you? And especially when you have numbers, there's a lot of, you know, big numbers involved. And how do you do all that? Yeah. So we got pretty good at it, but it led me to think that, you know, we really need some tools. The progressive community in Chicago, you know, there are a lot of think tanks and innovation centers and incubators, but they're all for, you know, high-tech ventures and, you know, creating the next Facebook and stuff like that. But there really was no laboratory for civic engagement and tool building for social change and social justice. You know, you're left with PowerPoint and a website and creating a petition online, and, you know, you're working out of your car or whatever. You know, it's just so pathetic. And, you know, people are always reinventing the wheel in this world of social justice, and we often don't know what each other are doing. So if I'm fighting for housing on the north side and you're doing similar work but on the far south side, I may never meet you. You know what I'm saying? And let alone if I'm doing environmental justice on the far north side and you're doing housing on the far south side, we may never meet for sure.
That's right. It's so a huge city, and one of the ways that it manages to keep people down is to keep them disorganized, fighting for the crumbs that are handed out.
That was the reason for creating the Civic Lab. So myself and a fellow named Benjamin Sugar, we opened the Civic Lab in June of 2013, but that's after almost a solid year of planning. You know, I ran for office, for Cook County Board President in 2010, and that was helping me, that campaign helped me solidify the thoughts and ideas of what should be in a place like a Civic Lab. So the Civic Lab was located in the West Loop. It was America's only co-working space for civic engagement, social justice, and community organizing troublemaking. We rented our desks out for $100 a month. We had free Wi-Fi, free printing, free coffee. Over time, 16 groups worked out of the Civic Lab, dozens and dozens of meetings, planning sessions, festival. You know, we had parties. We had convenings. We taught, and we had workshops. In the evening, open enrollment workshops taught by subject matter experts on all things civic, including how to start a community garden, how to run for office. Again, building your civic muscles.
You had some cultural events there, too, which...
We had music. We had parties. We had things about food. We had a lot of food. We served food a lot of times. We did things around food and around healthy eating. So, you know, about 700 people came and took the classes, the workshops that, as I say, we offered in the evenings. And one of the things that we built at the Civic Lab was a tool called the TIFF Illumination Project. And so during the Olympic fight, you know, one of the arguments that the mayor had used to justify the bid and similar other crappy projects was, we're broke. Chicago has no money. And we also have no ideas about how to do grassroots economic prosperity. We just keep going back to these same bankrupt ideas about tourism. You know, we just built another Ferris wheel. I mean, nothing's really changed. So we tore down the old Ferris wheel, you know, and spent about $25 million to build a new Ferris wheel. You know, not as grand as the Olympics, but it's the same idea. You know, we have no ideas. The only thing we have to do is bring in outbound tourists from other places. That's the same idea that they keep recycling. So having other information would maybe, as you say, prick that balloon. So is Chicago broke? Well, at the height of the Olympic fight, we got a hold of all the TIF reports, tax increment financing reports. We opened them all up, and we added up the amount of money that was in the accounts, and we found out that at that time, in 2009, there was $1.45 billion sitting in the TIF accounts. So now, for the summer and the fall, as the Olympic fight was being waged, we were able to say to the mayor and his lackeys, "You guys are lying. We are not broke. We don't need to bring in this Olympic game. It's a horrible idea anyway. But we've got almost $1.5 billion in ready cash right this minute. So you could do a lot with that." And that's helped, that really, you know, open people's ears to our other arguments. So that led to the TIFF Illumination Project. The question is, what is a TIFF? Why should you care? And what's it doing to me where I live, you know, in Uptown or Beverly? So we combined data mining, map making, graphic design, and community organizing to do these meetings, which we call TIFF Illuminations. And we did the first one in February of 2013, and we described the TIFFs of the 27th Ward with a map. And we listed who got paid, and it was very concise and easy to understand, and everybody could take home these little graphic posters. So it's all, people can see this all at tiffreports.com. It's all there. But the invitation to the people in the audience was, if you found this interesting, go home and organize a meeting, and we'll come to you. We'll do the same thing for your ward. And we did that not knowing how it would go, but it's very popular, and it's 47 meetings later, and it hasn't stopped. Just people about, want to know this stuff.
Because the TIFFs had been originally sold as a way of raising money for blighted zone development, when the reality was the exact opposite. And at the same time, it was starving. It was like a hand around the throat of the public schools in the TIFF, affected by each TIFF district, or the library, or the infrastructure that would be denied for X number of years. Any increase in tax revenues that became available?
Well, our research revealed year after year these giant surpluses in the TIFF accounts. So the current number that's out there is $1.44 billion. That's how much money was in the TIFF accounts on January 1st, 2015. Now, in July of this year, we'll get the numbers and we'll be able to report on what happened in 2015 going into this year. But after running around the city, you know, for 3 years in front of almost 5,000 people, people are angry and they don't believe that we're broke. So this is the major point that I want to make, is that when you're showering hundreds of millions and even billions of dollars on private companies with no transparency and really no recourse and no real understanding or rationale about why this company got a big birthday present of money, but the guy down the street didn't. It's because of who you know and clout and pay to play. Okay. So it's a giant slush fund. And so the question I ask my audiences are, is Chicago broke, and who plans what for who? And that led to the creation of this book called Chicago is Not Broke, Funding the City We Deserve. So people can find out about this at wearenotbroke.org. This is short articles written by really great and well-known experts and activists here in Chicago, documenting and explaining how we've wasted money or we can generate new money. And save money by stopping the waste and generate new funds. So the chapters are divided into three sections. The first is money we did not have to spend, money that's been stolen from us. Then we have money that's been hidden from us, and then money we're not collecting. So you put those three together, and you come up with a giant number. And the book will be available for sale very shortly at $10, and you can go to wearenotbroke.org and order your copy today.
Are you still having a fundraiser to publish it?
Yeah, the fundraiser is still going on. We'll probably close the fundraiser out around July 4th. But, yes, people can go to the same website, wearenotbroke.org, and contribute to the crowdfunding campaign so we can publish. We want to print 5,000 copies of this thing and really flood the market, you know, return to all those 45 communities that we visited in Chicago and do much more and get this book out there with the ideas in time to influence the discussion of the 2017 Chicago budget. Any one of the ideas, and there's like about 8 different ideas in the book, any one of them would mean a huge cash infusion for the city. The discussion around any or all of these ideas is desperately needed in the city. Remember, last year, without very little dissent, the mayor pushed through about a $740 million tax and fee rate of the city. So I think he got 14 no votes in city council. So I'm not sure he was sweating that vote. You know, like, oh, I'm not sure if I'm going to pass my budget this year. So he got 34, 35 yes votes. And the result is everybody in the city is paying $750 million more. And that's regression. That's the wrong way to go. It's hitting the people who can least afford to pay. So the ideas in this book are all progressive and sustainable.
Right. So let me ask you, these techniques and organizing efforts, they're long-term. They are based on a sense of optimism that civic input can make democratic institutions function as they're sold to us, as they're pitched to us. And as they should be if it's democratic, yet very little is mentioned about the powers, the financial institutions, the oligarchs in this town, the real estate barons, who are the forces behind the mayor's policies, supported the past mayor's corruption as long as they got theirs protected, and that their interests were furthered in the way this town was developed, assets utilized, the way the banks had access to the public monies without any obligation to pay interest, or I guess it was a big deal when they were finally forced to start reinvesting in the communities that they had been terrorizing through their loan and failure to insure policies. Can you address the fact that the World Business Chicago group and the other councils that are connected to the major foundations represent financial interests that want just the opposite of what you're trying to achieve, which is civilian control over this city and investment in programs that empower civilians instead of diminish their ability to be civically engaged, to have healthy lives, to raise healthy families, to enjoy leisure, etc.?
Well, let me just say, and then I gotta
okay. Go ahead.
Something else. You know, famous organizer Saul Alinsky said, "There's two kinds of power: organized money and organized people." So what you're talking about is organized money, whether they're the banks, the big law firms, the big architectural firms that, you know, that are hired to do these projects, you know, when they pour lots of concrete. So those are the interests that have been running Chicago for 100 years, going all the way back to the Burnham Plan. And the families that owned Chicago then, it's their grandchildren that own Chicago today. And their offspring are in the various boards of foundations and banks. So there is sort of a power elite, you know, that has been in Chicago for, you know, as long as we've been talking about this, you know, as long as people have been documenting and exposing and writing about these issues. You know, Jane Addams was an organizer back in like the 1880s and 1890s when she had Hull House, and she was fighting the same crowd, you know. Now we're fighting their grandchildren. So
that's right.
So the answer is, folks, if you're listening to this, you must be registered to vote. You must belong to some kind of civic body, some church, some block club. You must be in affiliation and relationship with your neighbors. You have to look across borders, you know, across the city. You have to think towards 2019 and don't elect the same goofballs that we've been electing. So we need a citywide organizing campaign. We need to have campaign schools to encourage people who normally would not run for office to run for office. We have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to do. But what I'm saying is, for now, what people can do is to go to wearenotbroke.org and register there and buy our book and organize around it. So
okay,
that's what I got.
last question. Do you work with groups like Black Lives 100 and police accountability campaigns that are growing in the city?
I have been over to the Let Us Breathe Collective, and I presented to them on these things I'm talking about. So, mm-hmm. Yes, and we're willing to go and talk about this subject to anybody, any organization, religious institution, business group. Ring us up at tom@civiclab.us, tom@civiclab.us, that's my email.
Okay.
Go to wearenotbroke.org, and there's a form you can fill out and contact us that way. We'll be happy to come and break it down for you.
Fantastic. This is WZRD Chicago. We've been talking to Tom Tresser about how Chicago lucked out through the hard work of No Game Chicago and Tom and his friends and the people who got behind that campaign and made it successful and avoided the nightmare of the Olympic Games. Thanks very much, Tom, for your civic works and informing listeners about the projects you've got going now, the TIFF Illumination Project being a significant one, and hope to talk to you in the future. This is WZRD Chicago.